Continuing education is more essential and more strategically valuable than ever. The old model of front-loaded education is no longer viable. Today's learners need relevant and flexible CE to keep pace.
And we have a free resource to help your learning business provide that kind of high-impact learning. The Strategic CE Playbook introduces a practical framework to help you strategically design and deliver continuing education programs that will succeed in today's complex and competitive market.
The playbook focuses on three essential levers: personalization, portfolio thinking, and performance.
To learn more about the three levers and how to use them effectively, get your copy of the Strategic CE Playbook at leadinglearning.com/strategic-CE. Because effort contributes to lasting, durable learning, learning businesses have a responsibility to expect learners to put in effort and to support them in doing so. I'm Salisa Steele.
I'm Jeff Cobb, and this is the Leading Learning Podcast. Have you ever met someone who seems to master everything with zero effort? Like they were born with skills the rest of us have to work for.
And we intend that as a true reflection question for you, dear listener. Can you think of someone who seems to have mastered something effortlessly? Pause this episode and take a moment to try to think of an example. It might be someone you know personally. It might be someone you've read or heard about.
The media is full of stories of apparently overnight successes. The song by the unknown band that rockets to number one, the best-selling novel by a newcomer, the newly discovered artist whose work is going for millions.
Yes, and what the media coverage is often missing is the effort that went into crafting those overnight successes. The countless hours of practice and the songs the band wrote that didn't make it onto any charts. The umpteen drafts of the novel and the dozens of rejections from publishers before the acceptance. The long days of art school where the artist studied and honed her craft.
Now, the person that popped to mind for me when thinking of effortless expertise is Sherlock Holmes.
I know you like mysteries.
I love Sherlock Holmes. And so often, Holmes appears just effortlessly brilliant. It's solving just, you know, these complex cases that no one else can crack and seemingly with complete ease. But if you read the stories carefully, Holmes is actually extremely meticulous. He's constantly studying and paying attention and being observant, and it's that effort that allows him to crack the cases.
Mozart is who came to mind for me. He supposedly composed his first pieces of music at the age of 5.
That's about when I was doing it, I think. Yeah.
And by 8, he had composed his first symphony. How old were you when you composed your first symphony?
I haven't gotten to that one yet, yeah.
I mean, he sort of seems like the epitome of a born talent. But Mozart's father was a musician and a composer himself, and he had his son studying and practicing for hours every day from a very early age. So the effort was there.
And odds are, dear listener, that whoever came to mind for you when thinking of that apparently effortless expert actually put in a lot of effort. And you'd probably find evidence of that if you dig into their history a bit. The effortless expert is a myth, because learning isn't about innate ability. It's about the effort we choose to invest. And so we want to look in this episode at the role of effort in learning and ways learning businesses can help support learners in putting in effort.
And this episode is the final installment in what has turned out to be a mini-series. We started in episode 425 with what's necessary to learn, and we talked about motivation, time, and effort. In episode 431, we unpacked motivation in an episode called Why Motivation and Mindset Matter. And then in episode 434, called The Small Matter of Time, we looked at the role of time in learning. And now in this episode, number 438, which is called This Is Hard and That's Not Bad, we're focusing on the role of effort in learning.
And effort is a critical part of learning that often gets overlooked. Learning isn't just about showing up or passively absorbing information. It's about the active engagement that we bring to it.
So we're going to start with the concepts of effort and attention, because attention is foundational. Before we can learn, we need to direct our attention. And so effort starts with giving our full focus to whatever the subject or the learning experience at hand is.
And as we've explained in other episodes, I mean, this is really a matter of working memory. Now, working memory is where we temporarily hold and manipulate information, and that part of our memory is limited. There's only so much we can put in there. And so when we divide attention, we reduce the effectiveness of our working memory.
Right. And all of this ties into the concept of cognitive load as well. And cognitive load is the mental energy that we need to process information. And the more complex the material, meaning the harder the subject or the skill is for those of us learning it, the higher the cognitive load and the higher the demand on our working memory.
And to help make sure that we're getting as much from a learning experience as possible, we need to do what we can to focus that limited working memory on the topics or skills that we're working on and not on other things.
Which means limiting distractions that might pull our attention away from the learning experience. For example, trying to read and respond to emails while participating in a webinar or a conference session. I will say I'm guilty of that.
I've never done that.
You've never done that. All right. Well, good for you, Jeff. But for me, and perhaps other folks like me who maybe have tried to read and respond to emails while also in a learning experience, that means we're spending part of our already limited working memory on something not related to the learning. That means we're dividing our attention, which means we aren't putting our full effort towards the learning.
And this, all comes down to debunking that multitasking myth. I think most people, probably most listeners here, are aware that multitasking isn't really a thing, that, despite what we might think, the brain just doesn't truly multitask. Instead, what it does is it task switches, meaning it shifts rapidly between tasks. And some people can be very fast at doing that to the point that they really feel like they are multitasking. But no matter what, that switching is draining energy and it's going to reduce learning efficiency.
I mean, one small example of this is that I've realized that I shouldn't listen to music with lyrics when I'm reading. I might be reading an article online, or maybe I'm reading part of a self-paced e-learning course, or I'm reading a book, whatever it is. But for me, hearing the song lyrics interferes with the words that I'm reading with my eyes, and it slows me down because of that increased cognitive load. I know that's not necessarily the case for everyone. I know that some people actually seem to be able to treat song as background sound, and they don't have that sort of level of interference. But for me, I do. And so this is a realization I've had, and it's something now that if I'm really focused on learning through reading, I try not to have any music with lyrics or anything that's sort of competing with those words I'm reading. And I don't want to be hearing anything else as I'm trying to concentrate on what I'm reading and learning that way.
Yeah, and I've realized I need to have my phone turned on Do Not Disturb and face down if I'm trying to do any intensive work in the morning, because it is amazing how many texts come in between, say, 8 o'clock and 10 o'clock in the morning. And
I never send you texts between 8 o'clock and 10 o'clock.
Never. But you have to ignore those if you want to really focus in and get some actual learning done.
And so if we think about our role as learning businesses and what we can do to help our learners focus their attention, keep the cognitive load, that sort of limited working memory, focused on the content at hand, one of the big things we can do is prune our content.
Right. Just get it down to what really is essential for the learner to be focused on. This is something we talk a lot about in the Presenting for Impact course that we've created, that if you are a presenter, you know so much, you can often be burdening the cognitive load of your learners because you're trying to tell them everything that you know and taking them down multiple rabbit holes when you really need to focus on what is that one thing they need to learn in this particular segment of the course and keep attention really focused well on that.
Now, another important concept related to effort in learning is desirable difficulty.
A term dear to the heart of every learning theorist, I think. And this is, the idea that a learning challenge that requires effort but strengthens learning, that's a good thing. That's the desirable part. It's difficult, but because it is achieving an aim and being difficult, we characterize that as desirable difficulty.
So when we engage in activities that make us work a little harder to recall or understand, our brains are creating stronger connections. So that's gets at the desirable part that you were talking about, Jeff. That effort strengthens the connections in our brains, makes that information or those skills become more ingrained and more easily called upon. We can talk about maybe a few examples of what desirable difficulty might look like, and we'll end up throwing around, I think, some other terms that listeners here are probably familiar with, and if not, be very good for you to become familiar with them. Effortful retrieval is one of those terms.
Right. This is a big one. So, you know, simple example, you know, when we test ourselves, we're pushing our brains to actively retrieve information. And this recall effort strengthens memory and helps us retain what we learn longer. In fact, this kind of self-testing is really one of the most effective learning practices that any lifelong learner can have.
Right. And I think coupled with effortful retrieval, the concept of spaced practice or spaced repetition fits very well. And the general idea with spacing is that it's more effective to spread out any review and practice of ideas and skills over time in smaller chunks rather than doing it all at once in a longer session, what sometimes gets called massed practice. And spaced practice helps us move information from working memory to long-term memory. And we've already talked about how working memory is extremely limited. Long-term memory is actually thought to potentially be limitless. And so as we're practicing concepts and revisiting them, and if we can move them out of that working memory into long-term memory, there from long-term memory, we can draw on them when needed. And a big part of effortful retrieval is getting that spacing right. You know, you need to let enough time elapse before you test yourself so that you've done a little bit of forgetting, actually, so that recall is a little bit harder than if you just did it 2 minutes after you had just practiced the same concept or just reviewed the same term, for example.
Another key example of that desirable difficulty is problem solving, or we might think of this as problem pre-solving. So when we try to solve problems before learning the answers, we're engaging in desirable difficulties of figuring it out ourselves makes the learning stick better than just passively watching someone else do it, someone else solve that problem.
Yeah. And, you know, we made a small nod towards effort when we asked you, dear listener, at the outside of this episode to think of someone who is apparently successful without effort. We didn't necessarily want to give our examples first. We wanted you to have the opportunity to do a little bit of problem solving, or at least answering that question on your own without the examples at first. And that's just, you know, a small example of a little bit of effort.
And we'll make clear here that not all difficulty is good. We've qualified this as desirable difficulty. You don't want to put in difficulty that is going to hinder learning. So, you know, simple example, if a slide is blurry, if it's hard to read, that's difficult, but that's not going to help with learning at all. So it's important to focus on difficulties that challenge us to recall, to understand, or to connect concepts actively.
A personal anecdote I can offer again is learning to snowboard a few years ago. I put on boots and strapped into a board, and I was slipping around all over the bunny slope and beginning to figure out balance and some other things on my own before the instructor said one word. Did I fall? Absolutely. Many times. But did I learn? Yes.
You were much more successful at learning that than I was. I fell a lot and finally decided that snowboarding wasn't for me. But I do experience this all the time, for example, in practicing the guitar. I've been working for a while and just trying to really, really know the whole fretboard, where all the notes are, where how all the scales work, how it all fits together. And boy, I get frustrated all the time in doing that. But, you know, making that effort, doing it spaced out over time, I can definitely tell I'm making progress, much more so than if I just sat down on a Saturday and said, I'm going to learn this. I would learn nothing doing that.
So, dear listener, we're going to encourage you again to put in a little effort of your own to pause this episode for just a moment and think of a time from your past where doing something difficult helped you learn. Now, in terms of tips for learning businesses around desirable difficulty, you know, if you make use of professional instructional designers, folks trained in instructional design, they're probably going to be well aware of the value of effort. They're going to be thinking through how to incorporate it. Now, if you rely on subject matter experts, though, you may need to do a little bit of educating them.
Yeah, I mean, in the first place, the subject matter experts are going to have to know about the value of effort and why it's valuable. And then second, they need to build in those effortful opportunities and make time for them. And this can be a bit of an uphill battle. I think it's at times hindered by sort of our evaluation system. And we've hinted at this in other episodes where, you know, we want our learners to like the experience. We want them to enjoy the experience because that's going to help them come back. But sometimes putting in that effort is not enjoyable, you know, and an instructor can end up getting dinged because they did things that were hard for the learners, when in fact it's going to be the most effective over time. So there, you know, in the world of the learning business, there's a challenge around this, really thinking through this desirable difficulty and how do you frame it in the best possible way as an instructor so that learners are receptive to it.
At Tagoras, we partner with professional and trade associations, continuing education units, training firms, and other learning businesses to help them to understand market realities and potential, to connect better with existing customers and find new ones, and to make smart investment decisions around product development and portfolio management. Drawing on our expertise in lifelong learning, market assessment, and strategy formulation, we can help you achieve greater reach, revenue, and impact. Learn more at tagoras.com/more. And we have a couple more terms and ideas that tie into effort that we want to talk about. The next two are reflection and elaboration. Reflection is about looking back at what we've learned. It's about asking ourselves how well we understand it. It's about considering how the ideas or the content apply to our work or our life.
And I think one of the keys here is for reflection to be active and to maybe contain a little bit of that effort that we're talking about, you know, not just simply sitting back in a chair and musing, but trying to do something with those reflections that you're having. So, you know, a practical tip, your reflection might involve something like journaling, in which case you're actually, you know, writing things down, which is helpful, or just, you know, mentally reviewing key points after a class, after a conference session, after an online module, making the time to do that. And well, this will lead into our next point, trying to make some connections as you're doing that.
That's right. And those connections, that ties to elaboration, which really is where we begin to link new information to what we already know. And so when we explain something in our own words or when we find examples from our own experience, that those are examples of elaboration. And that's helping us to embed that learning more deeply because it becomes connected to things that are already in our long-term memory, then we can then pull out the new information more readily because it has that sort of foothold in our long-term memory.
So maybe we can offer up an anecdote here, something that we're doing at Tagoras, as so many organizations are doing now, is trying to get our arms around AI, artificial intelligence, and have some meaningful part of our approach to learning about AI and implementing is having some meaningful conversations among staff. So we recently had a company meeting here, and we're talking about AI, and we were talking about when using AI and not disclosing it might be unethical. And we made the comparison to a situation in which someone buys cookies, puts them on a platter and buries the box at the bottom of the trash and presents the cookies at the end of a dinner party as something made from scratch, which I would never in a million years think of doing. This is purely a hypothetical situation.
And what you just shared there, Jeff, uses an analogy, and analogies are a kind of elaboration. When we use analogies, we're connecting new information to concepts that we already understand, and that deepens our comprehension and it helps with retention. And this is because an analogy helps bridge the gap between the unfamiliar and the familiar, creating this kind of mental hook that makes the new idea easier to remember and easier to apply. In that example, Jeff, you know, it was the store-bought cookies versus homemade, you know, when we're sort of talking about AI and uses of AI and when it's unethical. But we can also use it in a lot of other ways. You know, you could use the analogy of saying that working memory juggles a limited number of items. So then you get that idea of juggling, helping us visualize and relate to this concept of working memory, because we have some notion about juggling, right? It's hard to have a lot of items up in the air. So you get this idea that it's sort of limited. You get this idea that it's a little bit a difficult situation, you know, that working memory is a little tenuous. And so analogies are a very powerful tool for elaboration, and they actively engage us as learners in meaning making, because we're drawing parallels usually from our own experience. Sometimes an instructor might be giving us an analogy to help us, but either way, it's helping us to connect new information to something that we're already familiar with. And so this is the kind of thing that you might be using in some of your learning experiences.
Right. And so maybe we can offer up some tips for learning businesses once again around these concepts of elaboration and reflection. First of all, don't assume that learners know these concepts, or at least that they're fully engaged with these concepts and have them kind of front of mind when they're coming into a learning experience. It's worth taking some time to forefront them and explain them and give them some tips on how to use them. For example, something simple like note-taking, which we tend to take for granted, you know, assume people will do this. But we know that when you take notes, that trying to use your own words instead of copying verbatim is good to do in note-taking. We know that adding questions into your notes. So, you know, questions remind learners of what they know and what they're still figuring out. And this, of course, can prompt further reflection when you kind of frame those questions to yourself as you're creating those notes.
So it can be a simple act that you can do to encourage reflection and elaboration, is just to make sure that the learning experiences that you're offering in your portfolio do encourage reflection and elaboration. You can be more or less formal about it in any particular learning experience. You could simply pose a question, which gets people reflecting, or you might be slightly more elaborate in the sense of maybe providing a worksheet that really helps scaffold the reflection that someone might do as part of a learning experience.
I think the bottom line there is just you build in the opportunities and build in the time for those opportunities for elaboration and reflection, and don't just put that burden wholly on the learner. Help the learner with doing that, helping to find the time and sort of highlighting the importance of those activities.
And then effort, well, it takes effort, right? Which means that that there are a variety of, I guess, what we'll put under the umbrella lifestyle factors that can be important in supporting effort. And we're thinking about things like sleep, what you eat, your physical activity, your stress level, and those types of things. So we can touch on each of those just briefly.
Yeah, I think these don't get enough attention. And again, it's one of those things that we can help sort of forefront for learners and help them manage this as an aspect of their learning, because we don't really think of these as aspects of our learning. But sleep, for example, is essential for consolidating memory. So, you know, during deep and REM sleep, our brains process and store new information. And if we're not getting enough sleep, it's a lot harder to both focus on and then retain what we learn.
And then with diet and what we eat, that's tied to brain health. So, you know, we want to be thinking about eating healthy foods. You know, there's some research around omega-3s and antioxidants supporting cognitive function. But in general, what we know for sure is that poor nutrition can make us, you know, not feel very good. It can make it harder to stay focused, and essentially it can hinder learning.
Right. So we want to keep that in mind when we're planning those, you know, conference meals and snacks and those sorts of things. And then physical activity and mood, which are closely related. Exercise increases blood flow to the brain and releases neurochemicals that can enhance mood, that can enhance memory and focus. And physical activity in general can make us more receptive to learning.
And then stress. We know that chronic stress can disrupt memory and learning. And so we want to try to minimize that chronic stress for the sake of learning and for the sake of all sorts of reasons. You know, most people, just chronic stress is not a good thing. We will say that sometimes short-term stress can actually help you focus on learning. And again, you know, if we just get back to that example of perhaps asking a learner to solve a problem before you've sort of shown them the steps for the solution, that might create a little bit of stress for some learners. But again, that's a healthy level of stress. It's the kind of stress that can help them potentially focus on the task. And so there's a little bit of finding the balance. We don't want to overly stress our learners, but there might be times when there's appropriate small amounts of stress that do make sense. And so the sort of takeaway from all of this is that there are a range of factors that support the effort that learners can put in. And very often, we as learning businesses don't have a lot of control over these factors. But when we do, we should make smart, evidence-based choices. You know, Jeff, you mentioned menus at a conference, for example. So yeah, you know, making sure that you know, it's not sugary snacks or sugary snacks, at least only. Maybe during a longer session, you do a seventh inning stretch to get people up and moving for a moment, for example. Again, you don't always have that control, but when you do, thinking through some of how these lifestyle factors support learning can be important and helpful.
Yeah, I mean, that would be, you know, one area of tips for learning businesses to put this into action. Another sort of area of tips would be when it's appropriate and when you have the chance to help learners be aware of and think about these factors and what they can control. And I think that we should all keep this in mind as learning businesses and as subject matter experts. I mean, we've presumably got the attention of people when they're gathered in the room in front of us, and we don't want to get on a soapbox, but, you know, some useful reminders that these are important factors and sort of how to think about managing them, I think is something we should be pursuing. You can think about, for example, on testing days, we know that our schools emphasize the importance of kids eating well before showing up, and our elementary school for our own kids would actually provide a snack for all kids before testing actually took place. Again, connecting this, you know, nutrition and supporting learning through proper nutrition.
Yeah, and again, we can offer learners advice that they pay attention to when they tend to have their own lags in attention or surges in attention throughout the day. You know, maybe if learners are engaging with an online course that we provide, we can help them think through, when would it actually be most effective for me to engage in this course? If I happen to be really on the top of my game in the morning, maybe I need to make sure to try to carve out time to do that course in the morning rather than trying to leave it, you know, till at night at home right before bed, for example. So, what do we know about effort in learning? I think the short answer is we know that putting in effort contributes to lasting, durable learning.
Yeah, I mean, an abundance of good evidence-based research points to this. When learners do things like ask questions and take notes, they're putting in that useful effort, engaging in that kind of desirable difficulty. When they actively recall information from memory without referring to notes or the text, they're again putting in useful effort. When they try to solve a problem without first being taught how, once again, they're putting in useful effort.
Right. So those are forms of effort that involve desirable difficulty, and they therefore contribute to learning. And these kinds of efforts are things that we as learning businesses can and should support. There aren't overnight successes in learning. Learning isn't about innate ability. It's about the effort that learners choose to invest. And we as learning businesses should support learners in investing effort. Because effort contributes to lasting, durable learning, learning businesses have a responsibility to expect learners to put in effort and to support them in doing so.
At leadinglearning.com/episode438, you'll find show notes, a transcript, and options for subscribing to the podcast. If you haven't yet, please, please make the effort to subscribe.
We'd be grateful if you would take a moment to rate us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen, especially if you enjoy the show. Jeff and I personally appreciate reviews and ratings, and they help the podcast show up when others search for content on leading a learning business.
And please spread the word about Leading Learning. You can do that in a one-on-one conversation or email to a colleague, and you can do it through social media. In the show notes at leadinglearning.com/episode438, follow the link to connect with us on LinkedIn.
Thanks again, and see you next time on the Leading Learning Podcast.